File 3. You perceive that in crossing the Strom Channel, we always went a long way up above the whirl, even in the calmest weather, and then had to wait and watch carefully for the slack. But now we were driving right upon the pool itself, and in such a hurricane as this. To be sure, I thought, we shall get there just about the slack. There is some little hope in that. But in the next moment I cursed myself for being so great a fool as to dream of hope at all. I knew very well that we were doomed had we been 10 times a 90-gun ship. By this time the first fury of the tempest had spent itself, or perhaps we did not feel it so much as we scudded before it. But at all events, the seas, which at first had been kept down by the wind and lay flat and frothing, now got up into an absolute mountain. A singular change, too, had come over the heavens. Around in every direction it was still as black as pitch, but nearly overhead there burst out all at once a circular rift of clear sky, as clear as I ever saw, and of a deep, bright blue. And through it there blazed forth the full moon with a luster that I never knew before. She lit up everything about us with the greatest distinctness. But, oh God, what a scene it was to light up! I now made one or two attempts to speak to my brother, but in some manner which I could not understand, the din had so increased that I could not make him hear a single word, although I screamed at the top of my voice in his ear. Presently he shook his head, looking as pale as death, and held up one of his fingers as if to say, "Listen." At first I could not make out what he meant, but soon a hideous thought flashed upon me. I dragged my watch from its fob. It was not going. I glanced at its face by the moonlight, and then burst into tears as I flung it far away into the ocean. It had run down at 7 o'clock. We were behind the time of the slack, and the whirl of the storm was in full fury. When a boat is well built, properly trimmed, and not deep laden, the waves in a strong gale, when she is going large, seem always to slip from beneath her, which appears very strange to a landsman, and this is what is called riding in sea phrase. Well, so far we had ridden the swells very cleverly, but presently a gigantic sea happened to take us right under the counter, and bore us with it as it rose up, up as if into the sky. I would not have believed that any wave could rise so high. And then down we came with a sweep, a slide and a plunge that made me feel sick and dizzy, as if I was falling from some lofty mountain top in a dream. But while we were up, I had thrown a quick glance around, and that one glance was all sufficient. I saw our exact position in an instant. The Moskoe-Ström whirlpool was about 1/4 mile dead ahead, but no more like the everyday Moskoe-Ström than the whirl as you now see it is like a mill race. If I had not known where we were and what we had to expect, I should not have recognized the place at all. As it was, I involuntarily closed my eyes in horror. The lids clenched themselves together as if in a spasm. It could not have been more than 2 minutes afterwards until we suddenly felt the waves subside and were enveloped in foam. The boat made a sharp half-turn to larboard and then shot off in its new direction like a thunderbolt. At the same moment, the roaring noise of the water was completely drowned in a kind of shrill shriek, such a sound as you might imagine given out by the water pipes of many thousand steam vessels letting off their steam altogether. We were now in the belt of surf that always surrounds the whirl, and I thought, of course, that another moment would plunge us into the abyss, down which we could only see indistinctly on account of the amazing velocity with which we were borne along. The boat did not seem to sink into the water at all, but to skim like an air bubble upon the surface of the surge. Her starboard side was next the whirl, and on the larboard arose the world of ocean we had left. It looked like a huge rising wall between us and the horizon. It may appear strange, but now, when we were in the very jaws of the gulf, I felt more composed than when we were only approaching it. Having made up my mind to hope no more, I got rid of a great deal of that terror which unmanned me at first. I suppose it was despair that strung my nerves. It may look like boasting, but what I tell you is truth. I began to reflect how magnificent a thing it was to die in such a manner, and how foolish it was in me to think of so paltry a consideration as my own individual life, in view of so wonderful a manifestation of God's power. I do believe that I blushed with shame when this idea crossed my mind. After a little while, I became possessed with the keenest curiosity about the whirl itself. I positively felt a wish to explore its depths, even at the sacrifice I was going to make, and my principal grief was that I should never be able to tell my old companions on shore about the mysteries I should see. These, no doubt, were singular fancies to occupy a man's mind in such extremity, and I have often thought since that the revolutions of the boat around the pool might have rendered me a little light-headed. There was another circumstance which tended to restore my self-possession, and this was the cessation of the wind, which could not reach us in our present situation, for, as you saw yourself, the belt of surf is considerably lower than the general bed of the ocean, and this latter now towered above us in a high, black, mountainous ridge. If you have never been at sea in a heavy gale, you can form no idea of the confusion of mind occasioned by the wind and spray together. They blind, deafen, and strangle you, and take away all power of action or reflection. But we were now in a great measure rid of these annoyances, just as death-condemned felons in prison are allowed petty indulgences forbidden them while their doom is yet uncertain. How often we made the circuit of the belt, it is impossible to say. We careered round and round for perhaps an hour, flying rather than floating. getting gradually more and more into the middle of the surge. And then, nearer and nearer to its horrible inner edge. All this time I had never let go of the ringbolt. My brother was at the stern, holding on to a small empty water cask, which had been securely lashed under the coop of the counter, and was the only thing on deck that had not been swept overboard when the gale first took us. As we approached the brink of the pit, he let go his hold upon this, and made for the ring from which, in the agony of his terror, he endeavoured to force my hands, as it was not large enough to afford us both the secure grip. I never felt deeper grief than when I saw him attempt this act, although I knew he was a madman when he did it, a raving maniac through sheer fright. I did not care, however, to contest the point with him. I knew it could make no difference whether either of us held on at all. So I let him have the bolt and went astern to the cask. This there was no great difficulty in doing, for the smack flew round steadily enough, and upon an even keel, only swaying to and fro with the immense sweeps and swelters of the wind. Scarcely had I secured myself in my new position when we gave a wild lurch to starboard and rushed headlong into the abyss. I muttered a hurried prayer to God and thought all was over. As I felt the sickening sweep of the descent, I had instinctively tightened my hold upon the barrel and closed my eyes. For some seconds I dare not open them, while I expected instant destruction, and wondered that I was not already in my death struggles with the water. But moment after moment elapsed, and I still lived. The sense of falling had ceased, and the motion of the vessel seemed much as it had been before, while in the belt of foam, with the exception that she now lay more along. I took courage and looked once again upon the scene. Never shall I forget the sensations of awe, horror, and admiration with which I gazed about me. The boat appeared to be hanging, as if by magic, midway down upon the interior surface of a funnel, vast in circumference, prodigious in depth, and whose perfectly smooth sides might have been mistaken for ebony, but for the bewildering rapidity with which they spun round, and for the gleaming and ghastly radiance they shot forth as the rays of the full moon from that circular rift amid the clouds, which I have already described, streamed in a flood of golden glory along the black walls and far away down into the inmost recesses of the abyss.